Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Thanks for listening to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Wrinkly. I'm just what noticing happened? That as I get on camera here. You're wearing I usually wear black and you don't see the wrinkles. So now like I'm not wearing black. And
well, there's strategy behind that, right?
Exactly.
it's thinning and it doesn't show the wrinkles. So
exactly. You know. Exactly. Now I'm clearly not wearing black. I'm not checking either one of those boxes today. So you can see this over on our YouTube channel, which we're starting to get some plays over there. I mean, we just started this whole YouTube thing. So if you're listening to us somewhere else, I don't want you to stop over there because, you know, we like the plays.
Of course. Audio,
but we'd love to have you check us out on YouTube, share that, get over there and check it out. Just do a little search for
DIY definitely for business, comment and critique on our amazing attire each episode.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we should do. We should just have like some of those fashion people that do the Oscars beforehand come on and just critique what we're wearing. That would be so horrible. They're so mean sometimes.
Did you watch the Oscars, by the way?
I did. I watched most of it. I didn't watch all of it, but this was probably the most of the Oscars that I've watched since probably, I don't know, the 90s.
Me too. And I'm wondering why. Did they do a better job of marketing it and that got us both back to watching the Oscars? They moved it up in time for people. What got us this year?
I watched the slap. The slap. Like, what's going to happen this year? And now that nothing happened this year, maybe we won't watch it next year. But, you know, I was a little surprised. And maybe it happened. I didn't see it, but I haven't seen it on social media or anything. But that Chris Rock didn't come out. Like, you would think that he would come out for something and like have. I mean, I just thought like it would be cool if he came out and had like a swarm of security around him or something. Like, that would have been pretty darn funny. But they just didn't go there.
Did you hear that Will Smith applied to get his ban lifted so he could come to the Oscars this year?
No, I didn't.
Yes, he actually submitted a request to get his ban lifted because he wanted to watch the Ryan Gosling, you know, Ken. Wow. What do you call it? Performance, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, will they ever let him in, you think?
No.
Like, why would they, right? I mean, you're going to run up on stage, slap the host, and then they're going to let you back in. It just doesn't seem possible.
But look, you know, look at our political view. I mean, you know, the political state, that you could do a lot of things right now and still have privileges. So maybe, you know, not to get too into politics, but.
Right.
Hey,
right.
There we go. We knew we were going to get a notification. Yeah,
we were talking about the ringing of things beforehand. I'm going to leave that one in just for you, Greg.
I know somebody somewhere heard what I just said and said, no.
It's Will Smith making his face, calling you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I feel like he, I don't know. I mean, I have not watched a Will Smith movie since The Slap. And I don't know if that's been intentional or what, but like they just haven't sounded good because I feel like now it's like, it's this whole different feel to
right.
It changed who he was and, you know, just made him, I don't know, a different person to me. So it's like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy you know, whatever, Men in Black or Independence Day, like great movies. But am I going to enjoy those as much now?
I think you'll enjoy Ali better, though.
Yeah, that's true. You got all the training there. Oh, man. You know, it's hard, though. Like, there are actors, like, you think about, you know, these actors that were, like, you know, these big, you know, pieces of, like, let's say, like, childhood actors, right? Like, I don't know, some of the people from, like, those 80s shows or 90s shows, that 70s show. But these people that were in those different shows that, like, have to segue out and do something else, right? Like, the actors that are no longer acting, and now all of a sudden, you know, they've started some sort of business. Like, I know, like, several of them have, like, started, like, restaurants and, you know, these other, you know, little things.
They're getting into alcohol, like, you know, doing their own tequilas and...
Exactly. Yeah, it's just, it's all, like, these different things that they have to segue into. And that, speaking of segues, I think was an amazing one to segue into our guest who's made a few segues himself. Hey, Tom, we've got Tom Conlon joining us. Tom, you want to tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah, what's up, Russ and Greg? Thanks for having me on. I am not a former child actor. My segue
really
was really? Yeah, no. Yeah. So what I do now is I'm the founder and CEO of North Street Creative. We're a branding and design agency. So what we basically do is we'll create visual identities, brand messaging strategies, and we do a lot of website design and development, all on the sort of B2B side. So for us, that's financial services, professional services, healthcare, nonprofit. So we're not doing things like selling sneakers on e-commerce websites. We're doing stuff that's more, you know, businesses that serve other businesses. Been doing it for 13 years now, almost 14.
Nice.
But you know, a fantastic journey how you got there. Like, how did you get to that point where you started the company 13 years ago?
Yeah. So my background is I got out of college right before the dot-com like bubble even started and then was in the workforce when it blew up. So I started my career as a website design and developer, but when that was like a very new thing to do, right? And my first couple jobs were in the magazine industry. So I was in the consumer magazine industry, basically doing website design and development for these magazines. That ended, you know, years later, magazines kind of, I'm talking like 06, 07, magazines just like imploded.
Yeah, right,
and right. I had to find the kind of next thing. I'd been working in a magazine for about 5 years, and I had switched from the digital, like, sort of technical side to the content side, and was a writer and editor. And I like loved this job. I mean, it was like, I was in my 20s. It was a magazine that was made for men in their 20s. It was called FHM. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a Maxim. All right. Well, then you probably saw my byline and didn't even know it. I loved this job, man. It was like amazing. And then one day they called us into a conference room and they said, hey, guess what? We're shutting the magazine down. You're all out of a job. And that was like, I was in my 20s and it was this moment where I was like, man, I just like put my blood, sweat, and tears into this brand that I really believed in, like working late at night and on weekends to hit deadlines. And then like the carpet was just pulled out from under me in like one day. So I had to find another job, and I did. I ended up working at AOL and helping them launch a blog, but that was very short lived because I was just like, man, I don't really know if I'm going to be able to work for anybody anymore. And like feel trust in that sort of arrangement. And so I started freelancing and then freelance writing, but also doing website design and development. I just found early on, like, being a freelance writer is grueling and it's a thankless, impossible job. And if you do get paid, the pay rate is awful. Whereas a friend of a friend would ask me to make a website and I could do it and get paid. And I just kind of looked at my 40 hour minimum work week and was like, man, if I'm going to make a living here, like, I don't think I can do the writing thing. I think I'm going to do the website design and development thing. I wasn't really looking for jobs because, like I said, I was kind of like, man, if I can just make my rent and everything myself for now, like, I think that'll be good. And that was really the beginning. It was a freelance career. Then I got really busy. And at that point, I got busy and I got into some bigger clients. And I just hit this point where I was like, okay, it's decision-making time again. It's like, I'm either going to be a freelancer forever and there's no, and that's fine. This is like a decade or more before the gig economy, but it was like, okay, I'm either going to be a freelancer or maybe I can take on these projects, not do every single piece of them, maybe hire, you know, contract out some pieces. And as soon as I did that, that was like the beginning of my agency. It was like, okay, wow, I can not do every single thing. I can do some of it, project manage the whole thing, pay the subcontractor, make a nice profit. I'm like, wow, okay, I think I can make a living doing this. And that was the beginning. Then the freelancers became part-time employees. Then that became full-time employees with an office. And, you know, here I am almost 14 years later. Our staff is now, we're 13 people. We're all over the country. We can get into it, but like we were all in New York City before COVID, and now I barely have a presence in New York City. So it's been interesting.
There's so much to talk about there, because I mean, I love talking about the journey, you know, like the going from just like working for somebody and then taking that leap and, okay, well, I just need to make rent. I have this much money that I need to make. I mean, I was there. I did the same thing where it was like, okay, I have enough money in the bank to get me to this point. I don't know what's going to happen at that point, but hopefully, you know, and then you kind of blow past those deadlines and it's like, oh shoot, I think I can actually do this. But it's hard to make that leap. Like when you're, and I know you're talking to probably bigger businesses right now, but for the people that are listening, that are considering making that leap, like what advice do you give them?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where I'm sure you guys know, but it's like the things, if I knew now, I know now, I would sit myself down and give myself a real talking to. And some of the highlights of that conversation would definitely be, one is like, make sure that you love what you do, because and it doesn't, and what I mean is love the content, like love the world you're in, even if you're not doing it, right? So I was a designer and developer. I used to design and build websites. I loved it. I don't even, now as the head of my company, I don't even have like creative programs or a server running on my computer anymore. Like, I don't do that stuff anymore. But the thing is I love it so much. I love design. I love web design and development, that even when I'm not the one doing it, my team is doing it, and we're producing work, like, I just love it so much that I feel ownership over it. And even though I'm not the one doing it, I do feel like ownership, pride over it. And so if it wasn't something that I loved, and I would just be like, well, I'm not even doing, you know, I'm not even in this world that I'm interested in. Like, what's the point? So that would be one. Two, I would say you really need to think past your first client, right? I think a lot of people start off saying, I mean, they start off with an opportunity, which is that like, hey, I hear this a lot. Like, I'm going to go freelance, or my main employer is, I've decided to go into a consulting role with them. And that's great, because that's going to fill up 20 hours of my week or whatever. And that's all great. Even if it's like a full week, 40 hours, what you have to realize going in is that like, that's going to end. Nothing lasts forever. And so either that project's going to end, or that client's going to somehow part ways with you, whether that's voluntary or not. And like, you know, where's your next project coming from? And that's something that I didn't really do a lot of thinking about at first. It was kind of like, oh, there's all this work. And then I remember one day I was sitting there and I lost like three opportunities, right? Like, we had sort of like three proposals out and I was sure I was going to get at least one of them, didn't get any of them. And I remember being like, man, like, I have no idea where the next project is coming from. And so I would definitely say for people who are starting out, realize that you need to think, if you have landed like that sort of first anchor client, like, start thinking beyond that right away, and understand that you need to spend a significant amount of your time, whether that's your day or your week, doing like new business, whether that's sales or marketing, even if it's like informal networking, like you have to be doing like new business activities all the time, because you're going to have to fill up. You're gonna have to fill up the next slot when one opens up. So that's where I'll start with advice, but I'm sure I can think of plenty of other stuff.
Yeah. You know, I love that last one, is like always looking for, you know, more, right? You have to market yourself. You have to market your company. You have to get out there and network. And I think that's a challenge for a lot of people. Like, they're really good at their, you know, their craft, whether it's writing, yeah. whether it's content, you know, it, but maybe they're not so comfortable with actually marketing themselves. And, you know, I think that is a stumbling block for a lot of people that want to go out on their own. You know, for those people that have challenges to, you know, today's networking is different than what it was 10 years ago. I mean, yeah. even a few years ago before COVID, right. You know, networking was, you know, go to the chamber, go to the tip meeting, go to those types of things. Now it's online networking, right? Yeah. So, you know, what advice would you give somebody and where should they go to start networking themselves, you know, online?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I agree with you, Greg, that it's like, it's very hard for people who, I mean, look, I was a designer and a developer. The truth is I'm actually an introvert who is either pretending to be an extrovert or has learned to be. I wouldn't say I'm pretending. I would just say that I've learned to be. Like, I've learned to, right. like, love the world of people and conversations like this one. But, like, my go-to for years was, like, if I could sit in a...
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Dark room in front of a computer screen for 8 hours. Like that, I'll do that. Like I don't need to talk to anybody. So yeah, the first sort of leap is realizing that, like, you have to do it, right? And then it's okay, so what do you do? You know, there's a lot of I'm big on finding, I think networking within your there's a couple ways to do it, but I think networking within your discipline is actually a really sort of underutilized or underappreciated approach. And what I mean by that is I have a lot of friends who are other agency owners. You know, they're either bigger than me or they're smaller than me, or they're the same size and they have different clients. Now, like, early on in my career, I would have been like, I'm not talking to you. I'm not giving up my trade secrets. You know, like, I want nothing to do with you. And in fact, you're probably right. a competitor. And if I see you on the sidewalk, I'm going to cross the street. I have found over the years, like, those are actually my best networking relationships, because for a couple of reasons. One, they are running businesses that are similar to yours, even if they're much bigger or much smaller. You guys have the same kind of pain points, and so there's a lot of there's just a lot of knowledge that can be transferred. And so, like, early on, I was friends with a much larger agency owner, and I was able to go to him and ask questions about things that I was just like, oh man, like, what do I do in this situation? But the other nice thing about that is that, like, not every project is right for every agency, right? And so if I'm friends with 5 other agency owners, one is like a Shopify store. We don't do anything with that, right? And so, like, when I get opportunities that are e-commerce related, I can send them to him. And when he gets things that are like branding for a nonprofit, when he's, you know, selling sneakers or whatever on a website, like, he just can't service that work, so he or she will send that to me. So that's I think a very easy way to start networking and just kind of start getting out there, as opposed to going into a big room where you've got a real estate lawyer, you've got a divorce attorney, right. you've got a tax mm-hmm. and a guy who does titles and mortgage. It's like those rooms, you can't really penetrate those rooms, maybe never successfully, but if you do, you really have to have your, like, you have to have your spiel down. Like, you have to be able to tell someone very quickly who you are, what you do, and why it's relevant to them. And I think you get good practice from doing it, you know, in a more comfortable, smaller environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I think working it out with people that are that you feel okay with, you know, and in smaller groups, like if there's, you know, one or two people, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, I can tell it to one or two people several times. Now I can tell it to three or four. Now I can get, you know, I've got it down. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to get, like, I mean, it took me a long time. I mean, now I can rattle it off, but you know, in the beginning of my networking journey, I would get into a room and I'd be so nervous as like they came around and everyone was kind of saying what they do. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to say? What am I going to say that I do? And like, and I mean, honestly, my answer wasn't really great probably early. I was probably like, oh yeah, well, I do websites and logos for anybody. And honestly, I'll just do anything that's design related now. And like, what do you do with that as someone who's on the receiving end of that? Like, what do you do with that? It's so generic and so, you know, just abstract that like, I can't think of a person that might be a good fit for you, but if you hone it and it's like, you know, I do logos, brand identity and websites for law firms and financial services firms. It's like, okay, got it. Now I can think of like a potential, potential connections.
I wanted to ask you this, Russ, because what I find in those situations, if you can make you and your service relatable to them, right? Yeah. If there's some kind of connection to what they need, what they do and what you're offering, and you start with that, that opens up the doors, right? Mm-hmm. You just gotta find that relatability.
Absolutely. And honestly, I think it's often there's, you know, there's a lot of a big strategy for marketing and branding is just focusing on pain points, right? And so the pain point of the person you're talking to. And I don't mean pain like just like, oh my God, it's like the worst pain in the world. I just mean like what keeps them up at night, or what do they need, and how to like you service that, right? So for me, you know, we're good friends with SEO firms. We don't do SEO. Like, I don't want anything to do with it. But where I fit in is I need SEO consultation when we're doing a big website redesign. Like, I need to pull in an SEO person to like make sure that we're dotting our I's, crossing our T's, and not doing anything that's detrimental to the search traction. But that SEO person, if they're going to be effective with a different client, if their work is going to be effective, they need someone like me, a designer, a web designer, developer, to make the changes and recommendations that they're making. So you're right, Greg. I think if you can identify like what you do, and then like, you know, focus it on like how that relates to like what that person might need or what their clients might need, that's how to like get noticed, get remembered, and be effective in networking for sure.
And okay, so that deals with the niche of where you are as far as the design, the branding. What led you to, you know, legal and financial, like what led you to that, those industries?
I'll just say it was by chance, or it just happened over time, right? I definitely did not go out and be like, Tom Conlon is starting a branding and design agency that is focused on B2B. Because honestly, if you had asked me that at the beginning of starting my agency, I'd be like, what? Financial, like private equity firms and like financial and accounting firms? Like, no, I want to do Spotify's branding, and I want to do, you know, but you know, what happens is and I think this is natural, but I went through this process where, I mean, really at the beginning, North Street was all things for all people. I mean, we would have done anything that was within, you know, if I could do it on a computer with the things I knew, I would do it. So we were doing things like, while we were doing logos and website design and development, we were also doing things like live event activations and even like software development. And we were doing it for companies like, I mean, we did some work early on for, we did some work for YouTube through another agency. We did some work for Nike. But what ended up happening was, over the course of a few years, we started to realize that the best projects that we were getting were coming from, again, those other agencies, like a PR firm that their clients are just financial services companies. And so we get, you know, you get one project under your belt that goes well, you get another one under your belt and it goes well. That original PR firm that sent me those two clients is now going to send me more clients. And guess what? Now I have a portfolio of three projects, say, that are for financial services clients. Right. And I can go to the next guy and say, hey, look, I did this for a company exactly like yours, versus having, you know, landing on my website and being like, oh, it looks like they, you know, that you overwhelm people with with choices. It's like analysis paralysis or whatever. It's like, right. I can't tell who they service and what they even do. It seems like they do everything. And again, that's impossible. It's very hard to run an agency that way when like you are, when your audience is basically anyone on the internet.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, what's the balance there? Like, I don't think I've ever asked this question on this podcast before, but it's like something I probably feel like now I should have should ask this of every guest, because you know, we say like, okay, the riches are in the niches, right? Like,
yeah,
you get to this niche and it's like, okay, this is great, but what's the balance between niche and like diversification so that you're not gonna have to worry?
Yep. Yeah. So listen, I mean, COVID was a crazy example of like niching going wrong, right? I mean, yeah. I had a friend who had a PR firm that was all luxury hotels and travel. Mm. Like that's all they did. Right.
That hurt.
So they were screwed.
Yeah.
Right. So here's my approach to it. I think you niche down in order to proactively market yourself. Like the stuff I was saying before, like when you get into a room, you have to have something to say that is more focused than I'll do anything digital for any company. Right. It's like,
right.
So you can't write marketing copy around that. You can't write email drip campaigns. You can't write LinkedIn posts that have no, like that have just a wide audience. So my approach is when North Street is proactively marketing itself, we are talking to specific audiences, financial services companies, professional services firms, healthcare, nonprofit. That said, we have, because I've been in business for 14 years, a pretty big body of work that includes brands like YouTube and Nike. And so if that work comes our way and we can do the work and of course be profitable on it, I'm not going to turn it away just because that's not our niche focus. You know what I mean? Like if it's a client that came in the door and said, "Hey, we got your name from whoever, or we like your work, and you know you're not in our industry, but we think you guys would be great for this." Like absolutely. Like I personally would not turn that work away. I would absolutely do it, but I wouldn't market myself that way, if that makes sense. So a good example is like, you know, we have relationships with private equity firms, and private equity firms have portfolio companies, and those portfolio companies are all over the place. Right. So I think last year we did a rebrand and like a website for it's a discount syndicate company, but it's all around collision repair.
Okay.
Right? Like I don't have a collision repair portfolio to point to, and I'm also not going to like reword my website and all my marketing language to say that like, yeah, we do cars too, but hey, you know, it came in the door. It came in from a trusted referral source. It was a great fit in terms of what we do. We do branding and website. Yeah, of course we'll do it. So Russ, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I sort of do it, where it's like, I'm not closed off to everything else, but if I'm proactively marketing myself or talking about myself, I am focused.
Gotcha. So I'm going to shift it a little bit to how you market your clients, because, you know, in the legal space, I have a little vested interest. My daughter's an attorney, right? Right. And when I go down to Las Vegas, I spend a lot of time in Vegas. Don't judge me, but I spent a lot of time in Las Vegas, and I see billboards for attorneys like literally everywhere, right? I can't drive anywhere without seeing, and I'm going, is that really the best way to market your law firm, is on billboards on the side of freeways? And I know there's certain limitations in the legal industry as well as the financial industry on you know, what you can say and how you're supposed to market yourself and those types of things. But the real question I want to get to is like, when you have a new client, how do you identify who their audience is and what's the best way to, you know, capture that audience?
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right, Greg. There are, especially in legal and financial services there, and healthcare. Actually, there's legal rules and regulations around like, and compliance, so like around what you can say and what you can't say. So, I mean, the way we navigate that is we just know that that's a thing. We know that our designs and copy and anything else that we do at some point is going to have to go through compliance. Hopefully it's earlier than later, but my experience is compliance likes to wait until the whole thing is done, then look at it, then make their changes, and then it's a little bit of a redo. that's that. Just on the thing about the billboards, I am also baffled by mostly personal injury law. Right. In terms of the marketing, because I mean, we don't do our law clients are sort of like big corporate firms that do business law, IP law, things like that. We're not in the personal injury space. That is a whole separate, like, that's actually almost like a consumer brand inside of the legal industry, right? Because they're not, their end consumer is a person, not another business, or it's not a business person. It's a person that's there for personal reasons. So the marketing there is like, I don't know. It's confusing. I'm the same thing. I drive down the highway and I see a billboard of, I mean, I'll just, I think the guy's name is Brandon Roderick, which is like, good for him. He's like, he's nailed it into my head. And it's just like a picture of him. It's a picture of this guy. And then it's like his law firm. And I'm like, what even is that? And I think the play in personal injury law is just straight up name recognition. I think that is their play. It's just like, I'm going to bombard you with billboards that just say our name. And so that when you get hurt, the first, you're just going to like Pavlovian response, kind of just like dial the first name that you remember. Mine will be Brandon Roderick. So Brandon, if you're out there, good job. as far as your question was ultimately like, how are you identifying their audience? And so every project that we have, no matter if it's a branding project or just a website design and development project, is front loaded with a lot of research and strategy. And a big piece of the research is who is your audience? You know, what is their problem or issue that keeps them up at night? Why are they here on your website? What do they need to see, and what do you want them to do? Right. And so we go through these exercises all the time where, you know, there's always in the B2B space, there's always the client or potential client is like usually number one. Right. And then there's like partners and referral sources. Cause a lot of lawyers get clients from other law firms. And so that's an audience. Another audience is prospective talent, right? Like that is a huge audience that sometimes gets forgotten about in the process, but it's like, you can't have the same messaging for a prospective client as you do for a prospective employee. You need to have, you know, you need to have certain messaging that way. And then there's like other audiences, like members of the press and all that sort of thing. So what we do is we literally write down who are your audience members, you know, what's their problem, what do you do that services this or assuages this issue or pain that they're having, and what do you want them to do right now? And that's kind of how we do audience profiling.
Interesting. The different audiences on, you know, so you have a single website and you've got the, you know, recruitment folks coming in, they're going to research, like, I just hired somebody and he probably read the entire website. He looked everywhere, which was fantastic. Especially since he's doing some, you know, part of his role will be researching other clients.
But honestly, that's probably why he got hired. I mean, how many people I interviewed that have no clue what I do, what my company does? Yeah. I mean, that just drives me nuts. But go ahead.
I agree. Totally agree. Totally agree. I've been on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. But it's interesting. Like, you do have to, I mean, your message is out there on a single website and you've got to write content for multiple audiences. How are you handling that with these companies?
Yeah. So let's just talk about website, right? Because that's the biggest touch point. That's the first place people usually come across you. I think the best websites in my mind do two things. Because there are, let's just say there are five different users, which is like, you know, like I said before, prospective clients, prospective talent, media, et cetera.
Right.
But there are, but above that, there are actually two types of users, I think. And the two types of users are the ones who know exactly what they want and they just need to find it. And then the other one is they don't know what they're here for, and you need to kind of take them through a bit of a narrative and help them find what they want. So I like to think of a website, like, think about the navigation you know, if I want to find a specific white paper on your website about cannabis law, I should be able to find it very quickly by going to like your resources section and then filtering by whatever or typing in cannabis. But maybe I'm just vetting you guys and I'm not sure like what I'm really looking for. Just kind of want to know more about you. The homepage needs to do a really good job of like, I like to think of a homepage as like a table of contents for the rest of the website or a table of contents for the organization, if you even want to take it that far. And it's like, okay, you know, I'm on the table of contents. Here's a sort of big splashy kind of cover page statement that says what we do on a wide scale. But then as you scroll down the page, you should be taking the user through like a narrative with off ramps. Like when they see their off ramp, they should be able to easily take it. So it's like, okay, I don't really know much about this law firm. Let me scroll down. Oh, here's the different categories of legal work that they do. Oh, here's their HR page about the cool volunteering thing that they did last week at the soup kitchen. Now here's like three blog posts. Like you want to be able to, for the person that doesn't really know why they're there, you want to, it's more show. Like here, we're going to show you a couple different things. And just when you find your off ramp, like go click on it. We'll take you into another page. But the website also needs to do that second job of being like, hey, if you're here for that cannabis white paper, we want you to find it within two clicks.
Yeah. Well, we opened the AI door here. So how are you using AI within your organization?
We're starting slow and carefully. So what that means is we're not doing anything. We're not offering anything AI related to our clients, right? Like we're not saying like, hey, you know, I have friends in the content strategy space who are, they've got the pricing tier if all your articles they produce are AI, and then they've got the pricing tier if there's humans. We're not doing anything that's like, we're not selling AI enabled stuff to our clients. But what we are interested in doing is potentially using AI to improve our internal processes and efficiencies and therefore profitability. So a small example of that, and again, like we're just dipping our toes in this, but small example for that would be if we're going to go create a new brand for you guys, let's say, and you're like, hey, you know, we're keeping the name, but we've had the look and feel for like 5 years and it's time to like change things up and really reinvent the brand. You know, our part of our process is we start with mood boards, which are just visual kind of like, if you guys don't know what they are, it's like a Pinterest page of like just imagery, right? And it's like, here's what your brand could look and feel like. That'll take a designer, depending on how many they're doing, potentially a couple of days, right? Like to put together three different looks and feels for a small business podcast. But an AI model could do that in minutes if you've trained it the proper way. And so we're looking into that. We're looking into like, can we feed AI the way we do mood boards? Can we, you know, develop prompts that a designer can use internally to just, you know, type in a few things like, oh, I want something that's really techy, you know, dark colors, modern font, and sciencey, you know, and then like the AI spits something out, you know, something that took a designer probably 4 or 5 hours now is done in 15 minutes. So again, like we're dipping our toes in it because we have a whole dev side of our agency too, which is, you know, we build websites and like that is insane. I think there was a news story yesterday about a new AI that can teach other AIs how to code and right. Like code full websites, right? So more to come.
Yeah. No, I recently had a friend who he's like, oh, I don't know how to do this on my WordPress site. And I knew it was just a snippet of code and I could write the code and, you know, whatever, but it's going to probably, you know, I got to go in and figure it out and whatever. Uh-huh. I literally like screen capped, right. You know, I screen capped it. And then I, you know, because now, you know, Mac can just grab all the text. I just grabbed all the text, threw it into ChatGPT within like seconds. I had what the solution was, sent it to him. He pasted it on the site and all of a sudden he's got his feature that he wanted. I mean, seconds like that. Yeah. It's amazing what it can do.
It's insane. Yeah. We have a developer who used to work for us who's now, he freelances, but he's really gotten into AI, And I was talking to him recently, and he's like, he's got some side project he's doing, and he's writing it in PHP, which, you know, is a programming language. Yeah. And he just hadn't used PHP for a while. And he was like, and I just didn't really feel like relearning it. So I just went into this, I think it was ChatGPT, or maybe it was the GitHub Copilot, and just told it what I wanted to do, and then I wanted it in PHP. And he's like, it spit it out. I tested it, and it worked.
Yeah, right. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing what it's doing and what it's going to do, you know.
You're right.
It's
right. I think so too. I think my and this may be I don't want to be controversial or anything, but like it feels, and I'm also not like 100% on top of every single AI development that's happening as it's happening, but right now it seems to be a lot of mimicry, meaning that like AI can take what has been done over the course of human history, at least as far as it exists on the internet, and it can learn from that, and then it can produce things. But I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong, I haven't seen those sort of like leaps in creativity that you get from humans. And what I mean by that is, I was just reading an article today. It was about, I think it was the CEO of Netflix just saying that like AI is not going to replace human filmmakers anytime soon. And I don't know, you kind of think about like Oppenheimer, which was just a crazy movie, and Christopher Nolan just makes these crazy like decisions and does things that like people have never done before in film. Like I still believe, and maybe I'm wrong, that like that's the human energy or spark that's coming up with these new things. AI will be able to copy what Nolan did in Oppenheimer and make things out of it. But I'm not sure. I still think that there's just right now, at least, it's a lot of like taking what's already been done and creating kind of new stuff from it, but not huge leaps in creativity.
I think I've said this on the show, but I think it's about the last 10%. You know, it's like AI can get you there pretty far.
Yeah.
But it's that human touch at the end that, you know, like, I don't know. I was looking at, actually we, I'll just throw this out there. We had a guest, potential, that was, you know, asking to be a guest on the show. And they said, oh, I write all of these articles and I do all this. And I went and I read the article, and you could just tell, you know, because it started with like in the realm of blah, 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 blah. And it's just like every single one of your articles is ChatGPT. Why don't we just have ChatGPT on the show? You're not going to, you know, I mean, it's like, it's interesting to me that people think that it's going to, that it's done. It's the final piece that it's spitting out. It's not. I mean, and I think that's where the movie thing where, yeah, it can replicate, but it can't actually create, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a big missing thing. And the problem also, you know, with all of this is cost. You know, you look at like the cost of like the GPUs and just the availability of them. Get to this. And it's very expensive right now.
Yeah. I think a big piece of it too, like another way to think about it is like, you know, let's like take a step back from AI and let's just talk about before there was AI. You know, I'm in branding and website design and development, but there's these things called GoDaddy and Wix and Squarespace that let you set up a website instantly by yourself.
Website tonight from GoDaddy, right?
Right. But the thing is like, yeah, you can do that. Of course you can do it, but is it going to be any good? And like, how do you know if it's good? If you've never, you know, like my agency, we do 20 websites a year maybe, and we've got a process that works, and we're always refining and improving it. Like, we know what works, what doesn't work. We know what's going to work on some devices. We know what's ADA accessible, et cetera. Like, I just think that, yeah, you could do it by yourself, but like, first of all, you're going to have to project manage the entire thing. So that's, even if you're saving in dollars, you're not saving in time. And then at the end of the day, like, this is just something that like a computer spit out. Like, is it good? Is it not good? Is it going to work? I don't know. You don't, and you don't know either, because you're not a professional.
No.
Right.
We'll see.
It's like even you know, you're saying like, oh, I need outside help. I need the SEO guys to come in to make sure that the SEO is going to be okay. So you bring in an SEO company and they're able to handle that part. And yeah, I mean, it's those things, the website builders always drove me crazy. I always have a friend, like, you know, Greg said, oh, it's like the, you know, I'm the kind of tech guy. Right. So everybody knows that. People come to me with tech issues And if they come to me with one of those, you know, like the old school, like website tonight from GoDaddy or, you know, whatever, you know, Weebly or one of those sites, like,
yeah,
I don't do that. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I can figure it out, but it's going to take me hours to figure out because yeah. I have to live within the interface of, you know, of Weebly or, you know, whatever.
It becomes its own separate complicated thing, right? Because right. now you're doing things inside of the Weebly framework that you would never do.
Exactly.
Like logically.
Right? Like, you want advice on how to fix your site? Move it to WordPress.
Yeah,
yeah. Move it to something that you know you can hire people to help you with. Get it on Ruby, and you'll get some nice developers on there. Get it on something.
I think though, you know, like that. This is a common theme. I just see. I mean, you know, like in business coaching, there's a lot of sort of like how to run your business models, right? Like we use something called EOS, but there's something called Rockefeller Habits. There's all these programs, and what they do is they write a book and they give away how to do it. It's like here is yeah. how to do this system, and then what they say. But then of course there are professionals who are paid to help you implement that. And I think it's like we choose to pay for an implementer for this system because like I don't know this. Like I read the book and yeah, I could do it myself, right. but I'm probably not going to be very good at it. And if I have questions, where am I going to go? So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, so these business programs, they give out the playbook, but then they say, oh, and then you can hire somebody. And like, I kind of think it's the same way with like, I mean, if you look at the articles on our blog, a lot of them are like, here's how to do mood boards or here's how to do whatever. Like, I'm not, it's not a trade secret. Like I'll tell you how we do things, but ultimately like you're going to, our ideal client wants somebody who has experience, expertise, processes, and most importantly, project management, right? And like, mm-hmm. just like, it's not your problem anymore. It's ours. Like, it's our burden. Like, you've hired us and we're gonna do this. So like, sit back and don't worry. So I think, you know, that's kind of how I feel about these AI tools. It's like, yeah, you could yeah. totally code a website for yourself tomorrow, but.
Might not be good. Might not be good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And how do you know?
That's yeah. so many times on this show, right, Greg, where like we're just like, you know what? Yeah, maybe you can do it, but you're gonna waste so much of your time, which is money that you're wasting.
Right.
Like, just hire somebody.
Just and hire somebody who knows what they're doing,
especially on the web development.
Yeah, and honestly, guys, you know what? Like I think that's also a good like rule of thumb, I guess, for our conversation earlier about like starting your own business. It's like, you know, when you're starting your own business, you've got the work that you've got to do, but then you've got to do the marketing and then you've got to do the payroll. And it's like, you need to look yeah. at your time and what the cost of that time is.
Yeah.
And it's like, if yeah. you're spending 20 hours of your week doing invoicing, like, my God, like pay somebody offshore to do that, spend a day or two training them how to do it. But after that, it's out of your hands. And then your time can be used, you know, to do the more valuable right. work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Well, okay. So if somebody's listening and they want to reach out to you, they're inspired to no longer do it themselves or, you know, it's specifically in the legal or finance field. How do they reach out to you and, get a hold of you to get some help from you?
Yeah, cool. So our website's northstreetcreative.com. My email is tom@northstreetcreative.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn as Thomas Conlon. So, you know, just LinkedIn search Tom Conlon, Thomas Conlon, North Street, you'll find me. I love talking to people, about, you know, obviously new business, but, entrepreneurship, even helping people like find their first job out of college. Like it's like, I'm happy to spend time with people if I've got the time and I think I have something to contribute.
Awesome. Well, if you're not an extrovert, you fooled me. Yeah. I love talking to you. It was so fun having this conversation.
Yeah, man, this was great. You guys really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And right. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow, and all of the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we are happy to take your questions. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. So just head over to our website, DIYforBusinessPodcast.com, and the link is in the description there. So, you know, if you got a suggestion for us, you've got a guest for us, you want to be a guest, whatever it is, head over to the website, sign up, let us know, and we'd be happy to talk to you. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.